This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 16th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday morning is my dude, Jim Allen. What's happening, man?
I feel old today.
Only today.
Okay, I feel all, yeah, not just today, but
you woke up with this feeling all of a sudden.
yeah, it caught up with me because it was, well, not quite, about 40 years ago at this moment, I was getting on a plane at San Francisco Airport on my way to Japan for the first time.
Mm.
I haven't left, more or less.
Yes, you are lucky, I suppose.
I have been lucky.
Because I have been home. So my calculation method requires math.
Yeah,
of course, calculations always require math, but mine's confusing.
Yeah, yours is a simple algebra problem.
If there is such a thing.
Indeed. Okay, let's not get into the algebra. Anyway, good morning, everyone, or good evening, everyone, wherever you're listening to this.
Yeah. Still hot in Tokyo, which I don't mind, but my body is saying, hey, man, hey, it's supposed to be cooling off about this time. And so I've been blowing up here on my runs because it's still hot. My body's saying, hey, man, it's hot. I mean, I just like the pitchers. I think I don't know if it's new this year or not. Seems like a lot of pitching coaches, and when there's a break in the action and they go out to the mound, they're bringing a towel, they're bringing a bottle of water.
That actually started a couple of years ago, but yeah.
But I've seen it has been more prevalent here. I just want to give these guys a break, give them some, you know, the what they call in sumo, the chikaramizu.
Yeah.
Give them a little break and get them some water. And so I've needed that on my runs. I've just had to like stop and buy a drink and drink it. It's been hot out there. So I know these pitchers are going through. That's what's happening to me. Yeah, that's it. I've reached my pitch limit. All right, on this week's show, we've got DeNA reliever JB Wendelken. We were going to go rocking with Roki a little bit. We're going to talk about the playoff races, and then we're going to just hit the high heat after a couple of notes about retirement. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So I went to Tokyo Dome on September 8th, and I had a chat with second-year Yokohama DeNA reliever JB Wendelken, who is suddenly the veteran reliever or pitcher among the pitchers in Yokohama, because they brought in a couple of new imports this season. And so he was the guy who had all the experience of 1 year last year. And he had some arm issues earlier this season and really had been away for a long time on the mend, but he's back and he's effective. And it was really fun talking to him at Tokyo Dome. It was like seeing an old friend. We got him, had him on the show two times last season. Yep. And I don't remember who it was. Maybe it was you who pointed out. Maybe it was JB himself who said, hey, my initials are the same as the initials of the show. And was it you who pointed that out, or was it JB himself?
Well, I do not know.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you said that somebody told you or something like that. But anyway, I mentioned it to him the second interview, and he said, yeah, the JBW, we're the same. So I'm like, well, not the same, man. You're, we've just been doing it more years in Japan than you've been doing it. How's that? So, but he's really fun to talk to, and I think he's going to be needed as the Bay Stars go down the stretch here and they play a heap of tight games and make a push for the playoffs. So let's hear what JB had to say.
All right, we got JBW on JBW again. Thank you for joining us and taking some time. We always appreciate it. How are you doing now?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying my time finally back. That's all I can ask.
How long were you actually out?
I'm assuming like 3.5 months. It was way too long.
When
did it start? Crazy.
Yeah, when did it start?
It started right there in early April, honestly. It was pretty much right out the rip. And it was not really... nothing in my timing was right. It was all off the whole time. I could feel something a little different. But we went and got it looked at, and it could, you could see issues. So we tried to mop them out by taking some time off and cleaning up and took way longer than we expected.
Yeah, well, it's good to see you back. Yeah. Good to see you back out there. Now, I asked another pitcher this question, but I'm trying to gather opinions. Your appearances are so inconsistent as a reliever. When you get out of your groove, how do you get it back?
It's getting back out there, honestly. And as sad as it is, it's the more we're out there, which everybody's like, oh, man, I need a day off. I throw so much or whatever. The only way we're really going to be consistent is consistently being out there. So, like, the only way you can really get back in your groove is by throwing. So, you got to go when they tell you to go and just pray that it's there.
All right, now, how is it this season being kind of the veteran import with a couple of new pitchers like Andre and Rowan?
It's good. I mean, those guys came in and really accepting. It's kind of like what I could tell them is, like, accept the culture, embrace it, because if you fight it, it's going to be way worse for you. And these guys, they come right in and wholeheartedly kind of accepted everything. And you see it in their numbers. They're doing really well. And it was just kind of fun that I could give somebody some advice that is actually helpful.
What kind of advice did you give them that they actually were able to implement other than, you know, embracing it?
Just in general, like, kind of like go with the flow. Enjoy your time here, because you don't know when you're getting this time back. And especially in a foreign country and new way of baseball. Like, I think I said it last year, like, it's a different game, completely different game from the States and over here. So just embrace it and try to jump into it feet first and let it ride.
All right. Now, I saw Cy Snead the other day at Jingju. He had some mound issues against Hanshin, like the dirt was not to his liking. So how do you like your mound? Because, I mean, by the time you get on the mound, like, four or five guys have been out there playing soccer on the thing.
Yeah, it's some mounds are extremely difficult to do it because it's the softer dirt and whatnot, and you have some craters out there that you have to jump around and dodge around and whatnot. If everyone can build Chinichi's mound, I don't know if any hitter would hit over 250. That mound is crazy. But in general, this mound's really good here. It's just a solid mound that's not too hard and not too soft. Just that perfect in between to where I can feel my spikes go into the dirt. That's all I need.
What is so good about the Nagoya Dome mound?
It's just huge. You take a normal pitcher and, like, say they're A+, or let's say they're a B. You put them on that mound, they become A+. Their stuff gets that much better. Even the hitters, talking to a lot of the guys, it's like, it's just different. It's a whole other angle. The pitches just seem like they come out of nowhere. More break. They say it's unreal. Like, it's,
well,
impressive.
I have noticed through recent years that the Chunichi pitchers pitch better at home than they do on the road. But I just assign that to the dome not giving up as many home runs.
Well, the dome actually helps with it because it is a massive field as well. It's a graveyard. But at the same time, that mound, it makes people that much. Your confidence gets boosted out there, for sure.
All right, so now I have more things to research here.
Yeah. All right. I believe you ask any pitcher in this league, they're going to say that mound is unreal. Sometimes it's kind of difficult to pitch on because it's that big of a change from the rest of them.
Huh. All right. Thank you for the fodder. Now I got, I'm sure Jim is going to listen to this, so he's got stuff to research too.
Yeah.
All right, now Rowan and the skipper had kind of a subtle incident the other day. I don't know, it was recent.
Yeah.
No outs. Rowan walked a couple guys, gave up a hit. Mira came out to get him out, take him out, and he was asking why. And then at the end, it looked like Mira was going to give him a pat on the back, but it turned out to be kind of I called it a shove pat because he wanted to get up the mound. How much do those kinds of incidents, how do you guys process that as a team?
As a team, it's like you love the passion out of the pitcher. Wick wants to stay out there. He's a gamer. He wants to fight. He wants to win. He's going to win 99% of the time. The dude is unreal. And from the manager's standpoint too, it's you want your team to win, and the best, and putting yourself in the best situation is the key there. So, like, him showing emotion as well is just as much as Wick. It's like, okay, you see two compassionate people wanting to go at it and wanting to win. So it's like, it's take it one way or the other. It's either way it's good, either way it's bad. It is what it is. It's a game. It's baseball happens.
And Bay Stars fans I know expected Wick to be deactivated, and I thought, I don't know about that, but for me personally, yeah, I like the fight. I don't want a guy who just flips the ball and is happy to come out of the game.
Yeah, that's the competitor you're looking for in guys. And the people that want to fight, guys that want to fight, want to be out there, and, like, those are his runs on bases. You don't want, for instance, if I walk the bases loaded and I get pulled out, I'm going to be upset just as much as he was, because I don't want somebody else cashing in my run. If I'm going to give up runs, I want to give up my own runs. I want to fight going down.
Right.
So, I mean, from that standpoint alone, it's awesome to see that, and that's what you want out of your pitchers. So, I mean, people saying that, I mean, it's outside looking in. They're not in the moment. If they were in the moment, it'd probably be way different for them as well.
Yeah, well, I like to fight. Now, I'm also going to be talking to Tyler about this, but September playoff race. How do you process and cope with all the pressure that comes with the tight battle, especially since you got four teams here?
Yeah. I wouldn't say the pressure's on the game. The pressure's on the schedule. The travel. That's the pressure. We day here, day there, 2 days here, bounce around, go around. That's the struggle. The game's the same no matter what. We played these guys all through the year, and obviously I wasn't here for half of them, but like, we're not going to go down without a fight. We're going to fight tooth and nail to the very end. And I'm not really concerned about the games because our team is really good. That's the least of my worries.
All right. Last question. How much might we see you closing out some games here in September, October?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Come on, man.
I wish I knew. Literally, you know more. But you might know more than me, actually.
I haven't seen any reports. I'm just looking at the games.
I'm just here to have a good time. It's Tanoshimu every day.
Tanoshimu. All right, man.
There you go.
Enjoy yourself. Thank Appreciate you, it. Thank you. Good seeing you again. Stay healthy. And good luck down the stretch.
Wow.
All right. So take that mound, people. The mound makes a pitcher an A-plus at Nagoya Dome. I imagine you listened to this and thought, okay, Jim's digging into data right away. Visiting pitcher.
Yeah, I heard that. Right. I got that. I caught that undertone, but no.
No, you didn't. I was going to say, what's your ERA at Nagoya Dome? What's your ERA at home?
My ERA is infinite wherever I throw the ball.
We all know that if you tried to throw a ball, you'd look like a three-legged giraffe with one leg broken.
You're too kind.
Trying to dance. All right.
You're too kind.
What stood out for you?
What, besides the gratuitous insults?
Oh, those stood out? Jeez, I fling those all the time. I don't know why you picked those all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Just like you woke up today.
He's hanging around John a lot. He's all positivity and light, but he's got a few things.
Hey man, marshmallows, rainbows, and sunshine. Welcome to Utopia. Have a seat.
Anyway, no, a couple of things. One, it is September, and my walk on song would be September song right now. But as soon as JB said, what he tells the guys, one line. You know, I'm starting to tear up here. He says, "You're never gonna get this time back." And I'm going, you know, that was it. He's got it. Now he charmed me a lot last year, and just different things, and I don't want to say oddball, but fresh. He has very fresh takes on lots of things, and this is not a fresh take, but it's an important one, and you know, not to let the things that surprise you get in the way of the things you know.
Okay.
Which is how to execute pitches and how to learn and how to, you know, a lot of the guys come here, and this is just me proselytizing a little bit. They come here having spent, you know, 20 years learning how to play baseball a certain way and learning how to prepare a certain way and learning how to stand and how to train and how, and then they come here and you know, they've been learning for 20 years and they think that, I don't want to say they think they know it all, but they think they've got the basics covered, and then they come here and everything's different, and it's like it can cause a lot of self-doubt. But the thing that some of these guys, and most of them know it, most of them tell me, is that they come here and at one point the people who are successful, They're really good at going back into that, I got to go back into learning mode and learn these things and sort them out.
Okay.
The things that are necessary and the things that aren't necessary for me.
Reshuffle, yeah.
Exactly. Because a lot of the guys come here, and this is more an old thing than a new thing, although we still get a few. They still, you know, I'm done with the learning. They know in MLB, of course, you know, and in any kind of competition, you can never stop learning because you always have to make adjustments. But they think the basics, you know, they think some guys will think, I'm through with this stage. Why am I going back to kindergarten? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But really the guys who succeed are the ones who say, you know, this isn't kindergarten, this is grad school.
Right. Right.
Like, as Tuffy Rhodes said, you know, I found out that the baseball I knew was checkers and they were trying to teach me chess.
Mm-hmm. So, awesome.
And that's an exaggeration, because MLB is as much chess as anything. They just don't, it's just on a different plane. So anyway, so that was, I love that. And then I have to say that I'm going to get a couple of Dragons references in here today.
Okay.
Especially because the Dragons, you know, since he talked about the mound at Nagoya Dome. And I think if the Dragons heard this 20 years ago, before the newspaper industry crashed and they were spending a lot of money, particularly on taking the Bay Stars' best players that the Bay Stars couldn't sign,
mm-hmm.
If they'd heard this 20 years ago, Chunichi would be, have his apart. Would they be out looking for a new apartment for him for next year?
Because
that's what they used to do. They used to take all the good players the Bay Stars didn't feel like they wanted to spend the money on and sign them. Tyrone mm-hmm. Woods being the most prominent of those, but not the only one.
Sure.
So that struck me as being the most interesting thing. I also love the other line, which is from the outside looking in. You know, how you see it is not how we see it, and that's fair. That's, which is true of everything when he's talking about the player's emotion on the field. I can't really, even though I do understand the concept and I do understand the emotion, it's not, you know, it's not my personal experience to be on that baseball field when there are 30,000 people in the stands and half of them are on my side and half of them wish I'd disappear. So it's hard to grasp, you know, it's really, I mean, even for you who played basketball, that's a mm-hmm. little different arena. Mm-hmm. So yeah. How about you?
Yeah. It was just the mound thing for me. I'm listening and I'm thinking, right. Yeah. I said it years ago. It just seems like the Dragons pitchers pitch so much better at Nagoya Dome. Now I chalked it up to, obviously, the fact that the dome is so spacious and it's hard sure. to hit home runs, that it gives them a little bit of confidence that they can throw the ball in some places mm-hmm. that they might not throw it.
Yep.
And then when you get to Jingu Stadium, you can't do that because a little pop-up might and float in the wind sometimes too, but it has the chance of going out. Tokyo Dome had a reputation early on when I came here, so 2005 on, that it was a huge home run friendly stadium, and we saw some balls that maybe were weird, some home runs that were weird that just kept carrying. But what I eventually started thinking was, when he said the mound was bigger, it conjured up these memories of Escon Field to me,
mm-hmm.
because remember when they built Escon Field, they said, oh, the mount, the space behind home plate to the backstop was too short and blah, 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 and you're going to have yep. to reconfigure and all this stuff.
Yep.
When JB said the mound was bigger, it got me thinking, well, there's probably parameters for each mound in Japan, but
right.
I also heard some guys talking yesterday. I was listening to the Yokohama broadcast, the one on Amazon Prime, and those guys were talking about the fact that, oh, this mound is soft, this mound is harder,
yes.
blah, blah, blah. What about the height? Are there limits? Are there yes. parameters for the height? And do they check? That's what it made me start thinking, because maybe they don't check. And once at the beginning of the season, when the mound is checked, they don't check it again. And Chunichi, they decide to make the mound a little higher because he said it's bigger. And I didn't know if that meant spatially or height-wise, but I assumed it was height, that they maybe have it a little bit more elevated than some of the other places. And I wonder how many times a season that they check the mounds, because a basketball court, you know, they measure the rims, the referees are required to measure things. They check the basketballs and all this stuff. When you play NFL football, the referees, as we know, are required to check the inflation rates of the of the footballs and make sure that they're inflated properly and blah blah blah, and the field is, you know, checked. How much
that's a good question.
Yeah. Is going on so that a guy comes up and tells us that the mound feels bigger. So that's what I started thinking about. I mean, it was great for him to say that. Whether these guys have a little, you know, confidence boost when they're out there and they pitch better, I'm waiting for you to do your data study. So we'll get that. We'll get that when you get time.
It's a good one.
Make sure you get guys at Nagoya Stadium and then versus their home stadium, straight up 1-to-1, and then other stadiums so that we can compare all those things. But yeah, good luck with that. Yeah,
the last thing, I guess I'll just stick my nose in here. Yeah, they do measure the height. Now, what they don't measure is the slope.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that the mound slopes are different as well.
Okay.
So they don't necessarily have to be the same angle. But yes, the measuring and how often is a good question. It's quite hard to measure the height of a mound.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can't take a tape measure and measure the height. You need some kind of tool or a level or something and some kind of effort. And again, I wouldn't know how much they do it, but it would be conceivably very hard. I'll have to ask somebody with the leagues about that. And the last thing was that, yes, the mounds are interesting because they build them all differently in Japan.
Sure.
And I know the Koshien mound is a popular one now, because they use the same building, they use the same clay bricks. I believe Tokyo Dome does, Nagoya Dome does, and there's a few. I think Escon Field does. Half of them probably now use the it's called Black Stick, the clay bricks that MLB uses in all its parks.
Yes, in fact, that was one of the things the Yokohama broadcasters were mentioning, that they're mixing in some of the different kind of red. They said red, harder clay, mm-hmm. dirt that they're using, right. And they said they're making them more in the image of major league mounds. And they were right, talking about that yesterday, and they were talking about which mounds were harder and which ones were softer.
Right, and they don't have any. They don't have standards. And the other thing is that when I started talking about this issue, I'm going to say it was 2014 because of the MLB, Nichibei Yakyu, the MLB Japan All-Star Tours, and started talking with the MLB chief groundskeepers. Oh, not the chief, because the chief is a guy who doesn't come to Japan, but his assistant who runs, it's
the top guy on the ground.
Yeah, I think George Toma is the guy who runs it. But yeah, the top guy on the ground, exactly. Top soil guy. So, and he was telling me that, we started talking about this and I started writing about it. And then I started talking to the different grounds crew guys.
Mm-hmm.
They tell me that basically until a couple of years ago, the groundskeepers at each, in America, there's a groundskeepers association. There's a trade society.
Wow.
So where they share information and techniques,
sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, so everybody can stay in Japan. They're so ultra competitive that they don't share nothing. Wow. It used to be that way. Now it's changed apparently because they're beginning to do that. And what happened was the MLB crews coming in and modifying the Koshien mound and modifying the Mazda mm-hmm. Stadium mound and modifying the Nagoya Dome mound and Tokyo Dome mound, which they do a lot. I mean, so they barely change it now when they come. They just, you know, check the angle and rebuild it, but it's more or less the way it is all the time now.
Gotcha.
So anyway, so that's that. But yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. And of course, what I remember from JB last year was his talking about how he likes surprises.
Uh-huh.
And I said, do you try out the mounds before you go out? He says, no, I like to be surprised.
I don't recall that.
I like to be surprised when I go out. And I think that was Jim, might have been someone else, but it was a reliever who said, what difference does it make if I see the mound before the game starts and I see it when I come into the game? It's not going to be the same mound anyway.
Sure. And that's what I said. I said, by the time he gets out there, guys have kicked it around pretty good. So,
yep.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much, JBW, and good luck to the Bay Stars as they make this playoff push. All right, let's make a four-seam transition if we can, and quickly just talk about the races because we want to hit that high heat today. The Carp are completely melting down. The Giants are looking like a team that means business on the business end of the season, and the Tigers are capable of turning this around, but they got to catch the ball and throw it a little bit better. And that's the Central League. What do you got?
Yeah, well, the story I'm reading today is, what is it with the Giants and the Swallows? You know, the Giants, they're playing all these series. You know, they swept the Carp. You know, they came from behind to take the Central League lead, and then they played the Carp, and a must-win series, you know, really critical series, and they swept them. And it's like, okay, you know, boy, we're ready to go. And then they play Yakult, and they're going like, what just happened here?
Yeah, it's like a family of kids, like seven kids, right? And the oldest hits, you know, one of the other ones, and the other one, that one hits another kid in the family and beats up on them. And then, you know, one of them, it's like the Carp, you know, can't really handle the Dragons, but the Bay Stars beat the Dragons like a drum. And then the Giants kind of struggle with the Dragons. But and I say kind of struggle, they're just under 500 against them, but they're right there with them. But then, the Tigers seem to be beating.
Yeah, the Swallows and Giants are sort of like a Looney Tune cartoon or Tom and Jerry, where it's like one of them would be walking down the street and whistling Dixie or whatever they do, and then the other one would come out with a sledgehammer and bash them on the head. So it's just sort of like, doesn't matter, but whoever thinks they got it made, get something handed to them.
But the Giants are very much in the driver's seat. They're yep. about to have a magic number and all that stuff. It's going to be tight, but you know, what is this, six losses in a row for the Carp? And I say they're completely melting down because I think yesterday we saw, and maybe in this six-game skid, and it's going into Sunday's games, but we saw their best infielders not completing some plays. And some. I mean, there was the pitcher Sotaro Shimoji had a double play ball and probably could have thrown it closer to the bag, but he saw two guys running at the bag. I don't think he knew which one to actually throw it to, and that just messed him up, and he ends up throwing a ball that kind of throws a little cutter to second base, and it just broke the wrong way. And
yeah, but on the other hand, you know, as what the game, Shosei Togo's game against the Hiroki Tokoda, uh-huh. the Carp the other day, and Tokoda, if anything, pitched better than Shosei Togo, but they just had a defensive inning where he didn't help because he threw a ball away. And they got shut out, first of all, but he threw a ball away and that allowed one run in. And then two more runs scored on balls that were just fluke singles. So nothing outstanding, but, you know, that happens, weird stuff. So, but yeah, the defense, but that wasn't the fault of the defense as much. It was just, you know, bad luck and bad timing. I mean,
sure.
Togo was a bit lucky, but, you know, that happens and it happens all season. So, but yeah, the Carp are kind of in trouble.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the Tigers, they're only two games back in the standings or standings wise or game difference wise, but they have three more losses than the Giants, and that's going to be hard to make up. So two games in the standings, but those three losses that they're behind, that presents a challenge or another or a bigger hurdle, but they're capable of turning this thing into a championship. I just don't see it happening. Let's quickly go to the Pacific League. Now, obviously, we were looking at a team in the SoftBank Hawks. Magic number is 8 as we sit here now. But the Fighters, with them firmly in second place, I think it's just about them getting ready for the playoffs. And I still don't – I did like Hiromi Ito the other day. He threw really well. He won his game. Takayuki Kato, just a guy you don't know what to do with him. You don't know if he's going to start game one for you. You don't know if you want to save him as that kind of magic bullet in the first round to get you through to the second round if you need that third game. Or just throw them in a sec on the second day to just try to hopefully you can finish off. I don't know what you do with him, but you got to pitch him because he has been effective down the stretch here, and I like what he does. But how much do you trust him in the playoffs? They just have so many questions.
Yeah, they have questions, but they have chances. You know, if they have guys who definitely can do the job. You know, I really like. Shoma, you know, but again, the typical Japanese young pitchers, Shoma Kanemura is inconsistent, but when he's good, he's really good. Koki Kitayama, I just like. He's got, he's got the game he lost against Hiroyo Miyagi last week. Yeah, his pitches were just first rate. He didn't lose that game by much, except that Hiroyo Miyagi had one of his best games in the last 3 years.
Mm. Yes,
so,
he did.
No, so I like those guys, and they definitely have they have the possibility. It's not like, oh, this guy pitches well once in a while, but they definitely got the possibility. If things go right for them, they could go really right for them.
Yes, I see that, but and as for,
it's not dependable. It's not something you want to bet anything on.
Sure,
but it could happen.
And I look at the Marines. I'm thinking that they're going to hold on here for third place. I talked to a couple of Marines over the weekend here, so we'll look for those in the coming weeks. And you know, that's a team too that. Against it, to me, that's a real good playoff matchup. I did give the Marines the advantage the other day when we were talking about it, and I do like Escombe Field as a home run stadium. If you do hit the ball on the nose, it's going to go out. So I think that's just fascinating. That is going to be really fun. Again, if you get Doki Sasaki, which one do we get? Not the Jekyll and Hyde version, but the actual Sasaki, who's consistent, and then you get Dallas Keuchel out there and someone else. I think they have a really good chance of moving on, but you could say the same about the Fighters because of their offense and those young players who have really come through. So that's going to be fun, but I do think that race is over. I think all three of those teams are going to be in the playoffs, and we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I watched Rockton yesterday, and I thought, okay. I mean, I love Takahisa Hayakawa's had, and he pitched yesterday, and he pitched okay.
He pitched okay,
and he was lucky to get out of it. And then the real luck came when Ryoji Kuribayashi took over Takahiro Norimoto's body.
Hashtag.
Had to load the bases with one out before he could save the game.
I was going to say, wait a minute, how did a Hiroshima Carb guy get into it? I mean, it's a different color, different shade of red, but
it is indeed. But you could see that he was his spirit animal yesterday. And when Norimoto got out of the inning, he did it, you know, he pumped his fist and then, and he went. And then you could see the look at his demeanor completely changed, like, oh man, that was horrible.
Yeah, spirit animal or comfort animal, which?
Yeah, well, he needed some comfort after that game. I love Norimoto, but good luck to them. And it was a fun. The Eagles are a fun team, but I think the Marines just got too big a lead on them.
Okay, all right, let's make a two seam transition and go rocking with Roki very quickly.
Yes,
he rocked
with Roki.
Yeah, well, Roki rocked. He wasn't rocked, but he pitched a week ago today. So depending on when you're listening to this, because Sasaki will throw, he's scheduled to throw this Sunday as well.
But he gets to pitch against Cebu, who actually been playing well recently.
Yeah, so. I was going to say that. Yeah, they're playing so many guys. I don't think I honestly don't think the catchers know what to do with some of these guys. They've never seen him. They haven't seen him in the minors. They don't know what they can do. They're only looking at data. They're learning as they go. But anyway, so Sasaki pitched on September 8th. He got the win, so he moved to 8-4. But I wouldn't say this was anything that he's going to say, hey, Mom, look what I did. He threw five innings, seven hits allowed. He struck out seven, but he walked four. Allowed three runs.
He was lucky. He was
labored. Yeah.
Oh man, he was lucky. He was throwing bad fastballs that they were just teeing off on. straight. And, you know, these guys, you know, they're professional hitters. You know, if you throw a, and, you know, people say, oh, Japanese hitters can't hit velocity.
Yeah.
It's not velocity that's the problem. Really, most of these guys are good enough that if you, if you're throwing 97
mm-hmm.
and it's straight, they're going to hit it. You know, the problem is if that's all you've got, and that's pretty much all he had was straight fastballs in the zone. And he could have easily given up three or more runs in the first inning.
And this is against, yeah, Rockton. Yeah.
This is against Rockton. And he allowed one run because A, Akito Takabe made a spectacular catch to rob somebody of extra bases, I think with no outs and a runner on first. So that saved one plus runs. And then Katsuya Kakunaka threw out a runner. Well, I think it was on a relay throw, but
yeah,
threw out a runner.
Say that again, because you don't get to say that very often.
You do not throw out a runner at the plate. He used to be, you know, he's always had an accurate arm.
Yeah,
he's always had been okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a great relay throw from the shortstop. I think that nailed the runner at the plate.
Yes.
So basically, they got an out at the plate. They got one. They could have easily been a three or four run inning. It turned out to be a one run inning, and then it proved particularly costly because Akito Takabe, and well, let me check my notes here, was the Sasaki gave up. Two-run fifth. Okay, he gave up two runs in the fifth, but the worst part about that was Takabe tried to do a whole highlight film in one game. Go for another catch in the inning, and the ball came off his glove. He landed on his wrist and sprained it, probably out for the rest of the regular season. And he's one of their better offensive and defensive players, so that's not a good game. Not only was Sasaki mediocre, but they lost one of their better players.
Yeah. So for Sasaki, I'm going to call that the Miss Piggy game. And do you know why?
Enlighten me.
Because that's lipstick on a pig, baby.
Okay.
Lipstick on a pig. He won, but it was ugly. And you wipe that stuff off, it's still a pig. Wow. That's a good line. We'll just move along here to the notes section. And as I said last week, I expected some retirements and I left a big name off my list. And I should have known Norichika Aoki of Yakult was going to announce his retirement because I saw him play this year. Remember, I had a friend from college come to visit Tokyo and we went to a Swallows game.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, there's your boy, Aoki. And he said, Aoki, you used to play with the Mets? And I said, yeah, I guess he did spend some time with the Mets among several.
He played, I think, with four teams in his last year.
Yeah, several teams. But yeah, and he says, wow, he's still playing? And I said, yes, by the grace of God, he is still out there playing, but I wouldn't say he's actually playing. And
well,
so I should have remembered.
Not actually succeeding. Yeah.
Well, the same difference.
You're in the field. You're playing, babe.
Well, yeah, but are you playing?
I don't play that.
Don't play with me. All right. So he did announce, and I was surprised. I watched his press conference because Pro Yaki News had the whole, I guess, most of it on there. And he just matter-of-factly went through his presser. We usually see a lot of tears, a lot of emotion. And he said, hey, look, I thought, you know, about retirement. I gave myself some time. I looked at the end of the season and I said, well, I'll give myself until X month. And if things don't change, if I don't change my mind, then I'm just going to hang it up. And he said, I didn't change. So I hung it up. And he was fine. He went through the whole thing. And then out pops Munetaka Murakami and has his flowers. So he got his flowers and Murakami's just crying and crying. He says, you know, Aoki said, stop, you're going to make me cry. And then the tears just started flying.
Oh, man.
So it was just
that's very
poetic.
Real.
What's that?
I said, that's very real.
Yeah,
you know,
very
I
poetic.
Like that. You know, it's funny because some of these retirements, you know, when you get to a certain level, and with a certain team, particularly big teams, and I'm going to single out the Giants and the Tigers, you know, they if they're a big star, they are required to make a big production of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Tatsunori Hara retired, they had this whole, they laid out a whole ceremony, and they, it was like they brought the Four Seasons Hotel to Tokyo Dome so they could have an intimate party with, you know, 53,000 of their closest friends.
Right.
And intimate. But it was so fake. You know, everything about it was fake. Everything about it was manufactured. And then Kazutomo Miyamoto, the Giants reliever and former, you know, swing pitcher, retired a couple. He retired, and his final game was maybe the next day or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the road, and he like went into the stands. He went up to the stands, and he was embracing the fans.
Wow!
And I thought how real that was. You know, it was heart wrenching. The whole Giants thing felt like you were watching watching The Crown on Netflix or something. You know, like what is this stuff? And of course, the other one, we had the famous one with Takashi Toritani of the Hanshin Tigers, who basically left the team, and the team said, "You can't leave. We've got a retirement ceremony planned.
You can't leave. Get back here.
We can't get our money back for that."
Yeah. So Aoki, he's a surefire Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Somebody posted, and I didn't realize this, but there's only 4 Japanese-born players who have more hits in their major league career.
Oh, I didn't realize that either. Yeah. And what did he have? He had in the 700 category somewhere?
2,700. No, I'm talking about major leagues around the world, not just...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not just Major League Baseball Incorporated.
Oh, come on, man. You're messing me up when you do stuff like that. Major League is Major League.
Japan's a major league because it's not a... Central and Pacific
Leagues
are major.
But it's not the major leagues.
No, yeah, it's not.
No one refers to it as the major
they
league.
They are major leagues.
I didn't say they weren't major league. I said no one refers to it as major league. When we talk about major league, we're talking about Major League Baseball, which is a brand. But anyway, okay. So
you go with that. Fine.
I'm going with that because
okay,
it's true.
Fine.
Only because it's a fact. But what did he have? 2,700 hits?
2,700, which was a couple hundred more than Hideki Matsui, but not as many as Ichiro Suzuki,
yeah,
Isao Harimoto, Sadaharu Oh, and Katsuya Nomura, period.
Wow.
Is that something?
Yeah, that is,
is,
I mean...
That's the little Norichika Aoki. Wow. I loved him coming up when he was when he was in the minors, and this guy was absolutely killing it, and he didn't get a chance to play until... Yeah, in fact, it was just 20 years ago at the All-Star Game. They have the Fresh Star Game in Japan.
Sure, yeah.
The Minor League All-Star Game the day before the... And I was in Osaka because of the labor negotiations that summer. And I watched that game from the Yomiuri office in Osaka. And watched him. He basically owned the game. And this is at a time when the Fresh Star MVPs, like, there was a stretch of about 8 or 9 years where every year the Fresh Star MVP became a really big star.
Mm-hmm.
It was really weird. And he just completely owned that game. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm looking forward. And he was Rookie of the Year and Central League batting champion the next year. So anyway.
Yeah, you guys can look up the stats. But obviously first Central League player to get, was he?
200 hits twice.
200 hits twice, yeah. So he has done, I think he retires with a career average of above 300. So just fantastic player. And
yep, and would have had a bit, yeah. And
if it too bad he didn't get to play more this season.
Yeah, too bad. And also the kind of an unfortunate end to his MLB career because basically his penultimate season was wiped out by a broken leg and a concussion.
Oh,
both on hit,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
On being hit by pitched balls. So,
yeah. And then before we could even get last week's show uploaded, Takahiro T. Okada. So, yeah, Takahiro Okada of the Oryx Buffaloes. And I think he was with the team when it was the
Blue Wave.
The Blue Wave, the
mm-hmm.
Oryx.
The pre merger. Yep.
Yeah, pre merger, pre 2005. And then also Ryoichi Adachi of Oryx announced, just among some of the guys.
But that, we knew that one because he's already a coach and he's already been basically on the bench as a coach and not a player.
Yeah, he announced.
Yeah, after three errors in one game, that was pretty much the death knell for his playing career.
For his career, yeah.
In one inning, excuse me, one inning.
Oh, that's right. It was one inning. Yes, it wasn't just one
new
inning.
Record setter. It was also Hanshin Takumi Akiyama also.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so apologies to Tony and Busan. We're going to have to hold yours because we got a couple of timely high heat questions, and we can hold your questions because they don't really have a time element. Also, Patrick in Northern California. But we did get a message from our own Michael Westbay from last week, and he's talking about last week's show, and he said, I've now heard Jim mention that Hanshin manager Okada doesn't disparage his players to the press a couple of times now. I guess he's not singling anyone out, but I've heard a number of times in Nikkan Sports that Okada has passive-aggressively commented that he must be the only person on the bench who wants to win. Nobody else seems to care or be upset when they lose. Response, Jim.
Yeah, and it was an interesting exchange. What I meant by that is if you're the Hanshin Tigers manager, basically it's not the beat reporters, but it's their bosses basically come up and say, find us a scapegoat. Because the story of the Hanshin Tigers, every Hanshin Tiger season is who's going to be the scapegoat. Now, I know this is an exaggeration, but they don't expect to win. So it's a really important question. And in the end, sometimes it becomes the manager, as it was with Akinobu Mayumi and Yuta Kawada, and not to the lesser degree, Tomoaki Kanemoto. But the great strength of Akihiro Yano and Akinobu Okada is that they are kind of like going, come on, guys, I'm not going to give you anybody. I'm not going to give you a name, but Okada will come out and say, yeah, nobody seems to care, but he's not going to come out and say it's all somebody's fault.
Yes.
And that was a problem that Wada had, particularly with Matt Merton, because when Kanemoto and Yano and none of the Japanese players were hitting, the reporters needed somebody to write headlines about. And he said, okay, go write about the foreign players who are struggling with the dead or ball. And so every day was a story about how come the foreign players were lazy and shiftless, basically. So, that's what the editors need. The reporters, of course, Michael, when I mentioned this to Michael, he said, that must make the reporters angry. I says, no, the reporters actually really like this. Okada gets along really well with the reporter, or he did until this year when he took them to task for sort of misrepresenting what he said, which is hard to say because the words he says are often so ambiguous.
Yeah, I'm gonna say when you're vague in the first place, if somebody misinterprets your vagueness, how can you blame them?
Yeah, yes.
You're talking around in circles and they draw a circle.
Yeah. And so it does happen, but when they're winning, it's not a problem because everybody's saying what a great positive guy he is. And he is, but he's been pretty good at dismantling the press, but it's their editors who basically demand that the reporters want to be on good route. They don't want to single out a player for the blame and have their name on the story.
Sure. And they can always say, look, my editor wants this and my editor wants that. So it's not even a direct hit on the reporters sometimes because they can use that, that they're just the conduit.
But you know, I think Okada does try extra hard to protect his players, which is, I think, the was for him and Akio Yano, who, he didn't win a pennant, but the Tigers were very good when they were under him, was the chief thing, was protecting the players and letting them play.
Yeah, and I didn't intro this email as probably I should have. Michael's located in Kanagawa Prefecture somewhere. I don't remember exactly where. It's way out there. Do you remember the?
He's on the Hakejima, but he's down there near Hakejima Sea, that sea amusement park down there.
Right, and he sent the message via Facebook Messenger, so that's how he got on. So I just wanted to point out that, yes, these instances of Okada saying something in the press, pointing out him being critical of the team as a group. But that's not really calling out anyone and pinning something on one particular player. So I'm not sure that's really relevant in this case. But there's there's motivating the entire team and there's pushing buttons of particular players. And I've seen Okada grumble and bark on the bench and make faces and take his cap off and wipe his brow and overall react to the general negativity that happens in games sometimes. And
I wouldn't be surprised. Happens. I wouldn't be surprised if he has it out with players behind the scenes.
The doors. Yes. And I would bet after games, he's calling guys in the office and reading them, not the Riot Act, but you know, the disturbing the peace act and some other things. But I just haven't seen him hang a player out to dry. Although I do remember some comments about Teruaki Sato this season when he said the young player had to go back to the farm and work on some things, but generally that's not his style. But he's certainly no Kazuyoshi Tatsunami of the Dragons who berated a player not in public but essentially kicked him off the team, Yota Kyoda, and told him to get out after he made an error on a play that
it was a tough play. It was not an easy play.
I had it as a hit. So, but anyway, saying that he didn't have the look of a player who wanted to compete. I'm like, what is that? That's not a thing. You know, you can't throw a guy off a team for the face he made. And he's no Tatsunori Hata who just takes second baseman and snacks on him over the years and then puts him back out there. It's like, he's got the Mr. Potato Head second baseman set and he's just mixing them all together and taking them apart and putting beard on one.
I mean, I don't know. The whole people who made that Who's My Second Baseman app, I wonder, they must be hoping Hara makes a comeback.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, like I said before, and the reason I bring that up is because you tell the public how you feel about players by the way you use them and how you take them out and put them into games. And I think that was a clear message. And we haven't seen, no matter how many, I think we have seen a few guys make defensive mistakes with the Hanshin Tigers this season and be sat down or be taken out of games or miss games for a spell or be sent to the farm and all that stuff. But we haven't heard the critical comments. So that's what we're talking about. And like I said, I heard comments about Teruaki Sato from Okada this season, but they weren't disparaging, just basically that the guy has to work on some things if he really wants to continue his career on an upward slope. And I don't think that's bad. And I think that's true of anybody. So,
yeah, I think if the guy who's very much like that is Masato Yoshi of the Marines, he's pretty much, he'll some say, well, this performance was not where he needs to be. Or he needs to work on this, or, you know, I can't understand what was going on there. But he doesn't make a big production of people betraying the team, which is an old style, you know, was really common in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yes, very old.
And in Nagoya, pretty much most of the time.
Okay. And the next question comes from Robert Fitz in New York, and that also came via Facebook Messenger. And he said, Jim, you mentioned that the league has already switched to a livelier ball. Do the stats support this? And if so, does this help explain the collapse of the Carp, a team based on pitching with no power hitting?
Well, good question. I hadn't thought about it much. So thank you, Rob.
Data search. Indeed. And Rob, some of you might recognize the name. Robert is an author and has written several books, I should say.
Sure.
About Japanese baseball.
Sure.
And we appreciate him taking the time.
Yeah, but he wrote a great book about the Babe Ruth and his tour of Japan. The author of most recently, Banzai Babe Ruth, Mashi, The Unfulfilled Baseball Dreams of Masanori Murakami, Wally Yonamine, The Man Who Changed Japanese Baseball, and more recently, I believe, the Nichibei Yakyu, the U.S. Tours of Japan. He was one of the authors of that. So, yeah, he's written a number of books. I met him, and I almost completely forgot. 30 years ago, we were in a fantasy baseball league at the same time. So,
Wow.
Yeah, in that group, we had Michael West Bay, who's made a life in Japanese baseball doing data, and a current MLB Japanese Japan-based Pacific Rim Scout was also in that league, so that was a league. And I've done some stuff in Japanese baseball too. So,
okay. So, any data
Okay. Yeah. So thanks for that. Okay. Well, two questions. First, since the middle of August to the middle of September, home runs are about 17% less frequent than in previous seasons, in the previous four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But through June, home runs were about 37% less frequent. So they are, the ball right now is livelier than it was at the start of the season, but it is continuing. The current ball is continuing the trend we've seen in the past 3 years of getting better and better every single year.
Mm.
Okay, so there is a pattern there, and it's not a particularly appealing one. So yes, it appears that, and the reason the ball is dead or was deader.
Softer.
No, not softer.
You said deader. Okay.
Deader. I said deader was according to the reasons I've heard was that the yarn used to sew the covers was poorer quality and was becoming frayed, and it was causing the hardest hit balls. The hardest hit balls in NPB to travel about 10 feet less far. So we're talking, let's say, if it's 450 feet, they were traveling 440 feet. So it's not a big deal, except anything that's just going to barely be a home run.
Sure.
It's probably not going to make it. So anyway, it's going to have a larger effect on teams that hit the ball in the air and hit the ball really hard.
Ball's coming apart at the seams.
They were, in fact, coming apart at the seams. Now, my belief is, that is unsubstantiated, is that they have started using balls they originally intended to use for 2025. And they've just put the remainder of the 2024 season's balls in storage, which is also a bad thing that... we should be careful about
that. Depending on where they store them, that could make them livelier, right? Because we saw that before, the balls were drier.
Yeah, it could be. MLB has done that trick, keeping balls that they know are livelier or deader and then putting them back when it suited their purposes. But as I said, a colleague said to me, do you think Japan's that smart? And I said, okay, probably not. Anyway, so the second question about the carp was really interesting because I had not thought about it at all. But the carp hit home runs more often through June than they have since the middle of August. So what does that tell you? The carp are not a power hitting team. In fact, they're last in NPB in hitting home runs this year, which is weird. Hmm. They are NPB's most extreme ground ball hitting team. And when they do hit fly balls, their home run percentage this year is just 3.6%, which is lowest in NPB.
Hmm.
This data is from Delta Graphs.
Okay.
Now, this ties in perfectly with having NPB's lowest hard contact percentage, 30.8%. Also, now, that's a stat generated also by Delta Graphs. Now, this suggests that, like the 2004 Central League champion Chunichi Dragons, the carp are powerless wonders who would do much better with a deader ball in play. They lose very little of their offense when the ball doesn't fly.
Right.
Right.
So does this explain the collapse?
I think it does.
No.
I think
it does?
Oh, sure. Because basically their offense is not... is not helped by a livelier ball, but all their opponents are.
Yes, but...
If the
ball's livelier, then they should be getting a little bit more out of what they do.
No, but the thing is, they don't hit the ball hard. So the dead ball didn't really impact them very much.
Okay, but you're saying is they're giving up more runs. They're just and they might be scoring
their
at
offense,
the same rate.
Their offense is basically only a tiny bit improved, and their opposing teams who hit the ball in the air,
okay,
and hit the ball harder
mm-hmm,
are having
in general.
Yeah, these balls are now going over the fence. These balls are now reaching the warning track in the gap and being caught. And the carps aren't. The carps are basically treading water and the other five teams they're swimming along, and the other five teams have got swim fins on.
Okay.
So I think it does perfectly explain this. Now, a note for the newcomers, and I mentioned the Dragons in 2004. Now, about 1999, I realized that Mizuno's balls were really juiced. And I could do this because there were teams that used them and teams that didn't, and teams that used them sometimes, mm-hmm. and teams that didn't. The Lotte Marines, for example, switched month by month. And the Dye Hawks switched. They used certain balls against certain teams,
right?
Because home teams could choose one of the ball. Yeah, they had authorized licensed makers they could choose from. So you could tell, and the teams then were until 1999. The teams were very, you know, I just call the team office and they'd tell me which teams and which games were which balls. Anyway, 2004, it's suddenly the rest of the media caught on, and it became a big thing about the difference between the Mizuno balls. And the Chunichi Dragons, before Tyrone Woods came, were basically a powerless team. They basically had no power. And so they said, the Chunichi Dragons said, hey, why, Hiromitsu Uchiha said, the manager said, if we're not hitting home runs, why should we help other teams hit home runs by having juiced baseball?
Mm-hmm.
So they switched baseballs in the middle of the season. They stopped using Mizuno balls and they started using dead balls. And of course, the funniest thing was that the Yomiuri Giants, who had this huge power-laden lineup that basically all they could do was hit home runs, said they tried to get the Central League to stop them. And then when they didn't get their way, they did what the Giants Yomiuri did what it did, complained about it. God, who does that remind me of? Man, it was whining and complaining about how it was unfair that the Dragons were doing things different from the way they expected. It was classic stuff. Yeah, 2004 was a really fun year, if you know, for things going on.
Yeah, well, I'm looking through this six game skid here that the Carp have experienced here, and they seem to have almost an error a game defensively.
Yeah, so it's not the only reason, but I'm just saying that the
defensive side is also contributing to the collapse.
Well, that's all they've got really is pitching and defense.
Defense, yes.
Yeah, and getting on base and getting on base and scratching out hits and singles and walks and a few doubles here and there.
I still think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they will too. At the Bay Stars, and they have their holes as well, and they have their shortcomings defensively, and so do the Tigers. But I still think it can be interesting to go down the stretch here and watch what happens, watch what unfolds. But I guarantee you, we're going to see some poor defense on the team that ends up finishing on the outside looking in. And we might see some poor defense on some of the teams that actually get in because that's what they have been all season. It's not going to change now.
It's so funny because last year, Akinobu Okada was credited for the Hanshin mm-hmm. defense being good. They still made a lot of errors, but they were
better, not good, but yes.
No, but that was the thing. I mean, errors were the reason they lost, and then all of a sudden they won, and so everyone said, oh, they stopped making errors. And I was like, yeah, they're still making errors, but nobody's talking about it this year. It's sort of like they just got used to it.
Yes, you're winning games.
Exactly.
All right, again, Robert, thank you so much.
Indeed, yes, thank you.
For taking the time to write a question. And Michael Westbay, I'm assuming you wanted us to use this on the show because you sent it to different locations here. So thank you for taking the time as well and being patient with us and waiting for us to answer one of your questions. Anyone else who has a question, and like I said, Tony and Patrick, you guys are on deck, hit us up on x.com at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. Leave us comments there. I'm loving how we're hitting to the last I don't know, a few weeks of the season. It's so much fun. I love it. Just need it to cool off a little bit so I can run a little bit easier in the morning. So,
well, you know,
that's not me complaining about the heat. That's my body saying that.
Oh,
me.
Okay. You know, as Bobby Valentine said in 2005, when I told him after they won the first two games of the Japan series, I covered the games in Chiba, John covered the games in Koshien. And I said, you know, I hope I really don't want you to sweep it. And I want you to come back here and play one more game so I can come out and see you guys. And he says, oh, that's right. You're a reporter. It's all about you. I forgot. And I said, yeah, pretty much.
All right.
It's all about us.
And with that, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.